WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there's no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 7th of August, 2019. This morning, at some point, at the end of the show here, I'm going to play the conclusion of the Duke Red Matter, but yours truly, Johnny Dollar. But first, I'm going to start things off with what I played last year. It's a series from Private Eyelashes, female detectives. This is Phyllis Cole, and the episode 6 of the Philco Show. It's a play on words by some radio tubes, Philco. That's the prevalent sponsor of that. This is the Double X Mystery. With an original air date, the 4th of March, 1936. My name is Arthur, and this is the grand hour here on WMFO, Medford.
Report this to Dr. Raymond.
Yeah, right away, miss.
I was planning.
From Hollywood,
there's a saying in the West.
Mysteries on the air, bringing you Phil Cole, the famous girl detective, and another opportunity to win your share of the $50,000 in cash prizes to be awarded the winners in this thrilling contest of skill. Every week at this same time, over this same station, your Philco radio tube dealer brings you transcribed the exciting Philco radio mystery contest. Big weekly prizes, gigantic grand prizes. You may win just by answering the easy contest question you will find in Philco Radio Mystery Book Number 2. If you haven't your copy yet, get it right away from your Philco Radio Tube dealer. In a moment, Philco, the girl detective, is going to solve the Double X Mystery. As you listen to the broadcast, those of you who already have Philco Mystery Book Number 2, open it to pages 6 and 7. Then you can follow the action on the diagram. Listen carefully. Take notes. Be prepared to win your share of the $50,000 in cash prizes. Ladies and gentlemen, here's the Double X Mystery. Our scene opens in Dr. Raymond's hospital, a famous private establishment. It is 11 o'clock in the morning, and Phil Coe and Tom Taylor are visiting a friend named Mrs. Brown, who is gravely ill. Phil has been ringing for the orderly, but receiving no response, she has gone into the corridor to look for him.
I'm awfully sorry, miss, but I didn't hear the buzzer. I'm Jad, the orderly.
Oh.
I hope you don't mind, miss, but I was having a smoke and a glance at the morning paper. Oh,
that's all right, Jad.
I was reading about last night's jewel robbery. That there diamond's quite valuable, ain't it?
Yes, that was a famous Faith diamond.
Well, there was a lot of shooting, and the police think they winged the bloke what stole it, but he got away. You know, coincidence is a funny thing.
What do you mean, Jad?
Well, of course it don't mean nothing, but a chap named Oliver came to the hospital early this morning with a bullet in his leg. Said he shot himself while cleaning his gun. Oliver's at the end of the corridor in room Double X.
Did Dr. Raymond report it to the police?
Oh, yes. They were here to investigate. But there's nothing to it. Smythe, that's Mr. Oliver's valet, he witnessed the accident. They're English chaps.
Oh.
You know, an hospital gives a bloke a chance to study human nature. Now take this chap Oliver, for instance. He gave me quite a chuckle this morning.
Oh, is it so funny to have a bullet in your leg?
Oh, no, it wasn't that. But when his nurse, Miss Rapp, was getting him ready for the operating room so they could probe for the bullet, she asked him to take out his false teeth. You know, miss, they make you take your dental plates out when you're taking an anesthetic.
Oh, yes, of course.
Well, Oliver kicked up an awful fuss. Said the nurse would lose the false teeth or maybe break them. But he finally took them out and put them in the pocket of his hospital gown. Most irregular.
Oh, hello, Phil. Where have you been?
Oh, I've just been talking to Judd.
Mrs. Brown's asleep, so we'd better not go back.
Yeah. Hello, here comes Miss Rapp. She's the nurse of the Englishman I was telling you about, Mr. Oliver.
Excuse me. Aren't you Miss Phyllis Coe, the detective?
Yes, Miss Rapp.
Something awfully strange has happened in room double X.
What has happened?
My patient, Mr. Oliver, was operated on a little while ago. Before they brought him back, I went into the room to get it ready and found everything all torn up.
What do you mean by torn up?
There'd been a thief in the room. Before I could finish getting things in order, Mr. Oliver arrived. Even in his drowsy condition from the anesthetic, he noticed the state of the room and became very excited.
Was anything missing?
Only a pair of silver-backed military brushes. I'm worried, Miss Coe. Won't you come into room double X and have a look around?
All right, I'll come. Is double X this next room on the right?
No, that's room Z. The one right beyond it is double X. Come right away, will you please?
Of course. And Judd?
Yes, miss?
You better go down and report this to Dr. Raymond.
Yeah, right away, miss.
And I was planning a lovely luncheon for just the two of us. Hey, what's going on out here?
Sounds like a Tom Taylor.
Hurry! You look like a spook in that hospital gown.
I feel like little Eva.
Phil, this is Harry Jewett. We were classmates at dear old Montague. Harry, this is Phyllis Cole, who loves me dearly.
Oh, I move that last be stricken from the record. How do you do, Mr. Jewett?
How do you do?
You remember Harry. He was one of the best guards that ever broke a center's neck.
Well, what about you, Tom? You did some mean tackling yourself.
You don't look very ill, Mr. Jewett.
No, Miss Cole, but I suppose my address will be room Z for the next week or so. My doctor insisted that I come here for observation. The old football injury to my stomach is kicking up again.
Well, when did you get here, invalid?
Just this morning. This is the first time I've had my door open. Just opened it. But the guy next door has been raising Cain, and I heard footsteps scurrying around here in the corridor, so I thought I'd open the door and investigate. What's it all about?
No, you tell him, Tom. I'll go next door to Double X and do a little investigating myself.
All right. If you need any help, give a war whoop.
All right. May I step in, Miss Rapp?
Oh, just a minute, Miss Cole. Mr. Oliver, this is Miss Cole.
I don't care who she is. Why don't people leave me alone?
I just want to ask a few questions, Mr. Oliver. Who is this other gentleman?
I am Smythe, Mr. Oliver's valet.
Oh, of course. Mr. Oliver, have you any idea who ransacked your room?
No, I have not.
In my opinion, your military brushes were stolen by a common sneak thief. Miss Rapp, I think you should notify the police.
Police? Now, look here. I'm a sick man.
Mr. Oliver, I'm only trying to help you.
Get out, both of you, and stay out. Until that comes the orderly to stay out, too. I brought Smythe over here to take care of me. I won't need anyone else.
I'm sorry I disturbed you. Come, Miss Rapp.
Oh, hello, Phil. Harry and I were just about to dash in there with a Marine.
By the sound of that guy, I thought sure he'd have a stroke.
I'm afraid Mr. Oliver doesn't like visitors.
Oh, Miss Cole, Dr. Raymond will be up shortly.
Oh, thank you, Judd. Now, let me get these four rooms straight. Mrs. Brown, whom we came to visit, is in room X, and Mr. Oliver is directly across from her in room double X. You, Mr. Jewett, occupy room Z next to Mr. Oliver, and in room Y, across from Z, is...
You wouldn't be interested in that room, Miss Coe. It's empty.
I'll go in and have a look anyway. I'll be right out.
Well, tell me, Harry, what have you been doing all these years since graduation?
Oh, one thing or another. Nothing to boast about. How about yourself?
Oh, you've never read any of my deathless novels?
Say, look, she's found the brushes.
Well, where were they, Phil?
On the floor of the closet. Look here. The silverbacks have been pried off.
Me as though the thief was searching for something little, something that might have been hidden in the brushes.
You're right, Tom. Now, Judd, tell me, have you been in that empty room this morning?
Me? Oh, no, Miss Cole.
Oh, come now, Judd, why don't you tell the truth?
What do you mean, Mr. Jewett?
Well, I was sitting in my room about an hour ago when I saw Judd come out of room Y. It's directly across the hall, so naturally I would see it.
He's right, miss, I was in there. But just to sneak a smoke and look at the morning paper... But I didn't take those brushes now, so help me.
Here comes Dr. Raymond, Miss Cole.
Oh, how do you do, Dr. Raymond?
Oh, good morning, Miss Cole. It's been a long time since I've had the pleasure of giving medical testimony in one of your court cases. Now, what is all this about silver brushes being stolen from Mr. Oliver?
Apparently, Doctor, there's been a sneak thief in the hospital. I found the brushes in this empty room, and I think the police should be notified.
Oh, but Miss Cole, if this gets into the papers...
Well, all right, Dr. Raymond. Well, Tom... It looks as though our luncheon plans haven't been spoiled after all.
Incredible. Well, Harry, we'll drop in tomorrow.
Okay, Tom. It's swell seeing you again. And nice meeting you, Miss Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Jewett. Goodbye.
Goodbye. I'll return to my bed of pain.
Oh, I'm sorry. You two haven't met. Dr. Raymond, this is Mr. Taylor.
Well, how are you doing, Mr. Taylor?
If you want me for anything, Dr. Raymond, call me at home. I'm in the book.
Thank you, Miss Cole. I shall. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Doctor.
Goodbye, sir.
Well, Tom... What do you make of it? Think Judd stole the brushes?
No, I think he probably dropped them when he was moving the furniture in room double X, saw they were broken, and hid them in the closet so he wouldn't be punished. What do you think?
I think we haven't heard the last of it. Come on, let's find that heavenly food you've been boasting about. Phyllis Cole speaking.
This is Dr. Raymond at the hospital.
Oh, yes, doctor.
My patient, Mr. Oliver, he's been murdered.
What?
Yes, strangled to death. Judd, the orderly, I found him just a moment ago, about 1:30, about 2 hours after you left.
Was anything stolen?
No, but the body is lying on the floor. The bandage is brutally torn from his leg. The bedclothes are all torn apart.
Had he been dead long when Judd discovered him?
No, only a few minutes. Please come over, Miss Cole.
All right, Dr. Raymond. I'll be right over. Dr. Raymond says you discovered the body. Please tell me everything.
There ain't much else to tell, Miss Cole. I brought him his broth and found him here, like this.
Where was Smythe, his valet?
He went out to do some errands, he said. He saw me in the hall and asked me to get the broth.
Well, did you do it immediately?
Yes, Dr. Raymond. That is, I ordered it immediately. It was 1 o'clock, and since the other patients has their lunches at 12:30, I had the phone down for it. It came up about 1:20.
What did you do in the meantime?
I went around to the other rooms and collected the trays.
Were the patients all in their rooms?
Oh, yes, miss. The other end of the hall is all surgical cases confined to bed. Your friend, Mr. Jewett, is the only man on this floor who can walk about. But he was lying down complaining of stomach pains. He couldn't eat a bit of his lunch. He didn't touch his tray.
Thank you, Judd. Please leave the room now and send Mr. Jewett in.
Yes, Miss Cole.
Well, have you learned anything?
No, just a moment, Dr. Raymond. I want to question the nurse. Miss Rapp, where were you between 1 and 1:30?
I was across the hall in room X with your friend, Mrs. Brown. I stayed with her while her special nurse was at lunch.
Oh, thank you. You may go. Oh, how careless of me, Doctor. I don't suppose I should have asked Mr. Jewett to come in here. Do you think moving around would seriously affect his condition?
Well, to be truthful, I really don't quite know what his trouble is. He arrived this morning and asked to be admitted. He has no physician of his own, and we're waiting for our stomach specialist to arrive.
I see. Oh, come in. Hello, Mr. Jewett.
Miss Cole, this is a frightful thing.
Oh, here, here now. Don't excite yourself. Here, you'd better sit down.
Oh, I'm all right, Dr. Raymond. Matter of fact, I'm thinking of leaving the hospital. I ate a tremendous lunch with no ill effects.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
Did Tom come back with you, Miss Cole?
No, but I left word where I was going. Dr. Raymond.
Yes?
I'm going to ask you to do something very unusual and quite unpleasant.
Well?
I want you to remove Mr. Oliver's false teeth from his mouth.
Well, why, Miss Coe, well, I suppose I can do it. Yeah, let me look. Yes, the plate comes out rather easily. Well, here you are.
I thought so. This plate is an odd shape. There's a sizable bulge in it. I press this catch. The plate swings open on a tiny gold hinge. And here's what the thief was looking for when he murdered Oliver.
A diamond?
Yes, Doctor. The faith diamond. Now you'll have to call the police. And then they can arrest you, Mr. Jewett, for murder.
Sorry, but I won't be here. I'll take charge of that diamond, Miss Cole. Come on, hand it over.
Jewett, oh. Put down that gun.
Stay where you are, both of you. Don't move, Jewett, or I'll drill you.
Smythe!
Drop that gun, Jewett.
Oh, good work, Smythe.
Thank you, Doctor. And now, Miss Cole, I'll take that stone.
Just a minute. Mr. Smythe, will you kindly explain yourself?
Well, Oliver and I came all the way from England to get the Faith Diamond. As for Mr. Jewett, as you Americans would say, he's been muscling in on our racket. And now, Miss Cole, if you haven't thrown that stone onto the bed within 5 seconds, I shall be forced to mess things up a trifle with this little pop gun. 1, 2, 3.
Tom!
Why, Tom, have you forgotten that tackling from behind is illegal? I'm afraid you've knocked Smythe out.
Phil, are you all right?
Oh, yes, I'm quick. Get you a stop him! Stop him!
So long, folks.
Oh. He's jumped through the window.
Take care of Phil, Doctor. I'll run down.
No need to, Taylor. This is the top floor.
Why do you suppose Phil Cole, the girl detective, suspected Harry Jewett? He really trapped himself, you know. Do you know why? You heard everything that happened, everything that was said. With the help of your Philco Mystery Book number 2, it should be easy for you to answer the contest question. You must have this Philco Mystery Book to enter the contest. So go and get yours free right away from your Philco radio tube dealer. Nothing to buy, of course. It's yours just for the asking. Listen to Philco Radio Mysteries every week at this time over this same station. Enter every weekly contest. It will be fun. It'll be exciting. Think of it, $50,000 in cash prizes for the winners. Doesn't that sound worth working for? Be wise and have your Philco radio tube dealer check up on your radio tube. Maybe you need new Philco tubes so that you won't miss any detail of any Philco mystery program. Don't let weak or noisy tubes spoil your opportunity to win. Names of major winners in this week's contest will be broadcast as soon as possible on a following Philco mystery program. Next week, Philco, the beautiful girl detective, is going to solve the mystery of the last will and testament. It's about a strange crime that happened up at Lonely Winds, the estate of rich old Daniel Bosworth. I'll be seeing you up there at this time over this station.
Thank you, lads. Something's up with this. Oh. Having a little technical difficulties here this morning. Yes, that was Philco. Phyllis Co. The Double X Mystery with an original air date. The 4th of March, 1936. Coming up next, I'm going to have an episode of The Frontier Gentleman. This is called The Cowboy. This was a sustained show for one season in 1958, starring John Daner. It was written and produced and directed by Antoine Ellis. The Cowboy had an original air date of the 25th of May, 1958. Following Frontier Gentlemen, I'll play the conclusion of yours truly, Johnny Dollars, the Duke Red Matter. You're listening to Arthur here on the Grand Hour on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Thanks for listening this morning. Here's Frontier Gentlemen.
West, that a cowboy is a man with guts and a horse. This is the story of one. His name was Slim.
Frontier Gentlemen. Herewith, an Englishman's account of life and death in the West. As a reporter for the London Times, he writes his colorful and unusual stories. But as a man with a gun, he lives and becomes a part of the violent years in the new territories. Now starring John Daner, this is the story of J.B. Kendall, Frontier Gentleman.
I had bought a horse in Cheyenne and was riding to Laramie in Wyoming Territory. I wanted a chance to really look at this grazing country and the thousands of head of cattle dotting its plains. I rode north of the railroad tracks until the telegraph poles lining it were lost in a dusty haze. And I saw clouds, heavy and bronze, over the distant mountains. It was during the afternoon that I came upon the cowboy, a lean man of about 30, with a cigarette hanging from his lips. He was examining the right foreleg of his horse, and he looked up as I approached. Hello.
Howdy.
Do you need any help?
That fool horse stepped in a gopher hole. Don't seem to be no strain, though.
Ah. Fine-looking animal.
He ain't a bad old buzzard head. Hey, you English?
Yes.
You a ranchman?
No, no. A newspaper correspondent.
Oh. Thought maybe if you was a ranchman, you'd be looking for a hand.
I'm sorry.
You don't make no never mind. I'm chasseying over to Laramie. Figure I'll get me a job one of them new layouts I hear tells open up.
I'm bound for Laramie myself. You mind if I ride with you?
Well, I take it as real friendly. Quit it, you moon-eyed son of a gun. Hold still.
You think we'll have rain?
Don't feel like it. Of course, you can't tell with them clouds. I've been on the range, and there ain't been nothing but blue up there, and wango, down she comes. Hail as big as your fist. I tell you, nature's a skittish beast. Ain't no how bridle-wise.
Oh, incidentally, my name is Kendall.
Slim, how are you?
Slim?
Been in these parts long?
Oh, a few weeks. I came down from Montana Territory by way of Deadwood.
That's so. Yeah, here, Wild Bill Hickok got plugged a while back in Deadwood.
Yeah? I was there when it happened.
That's so. Mm. What happened to the feller that done it?
McCall?
Yeah, that was his name, Jack McCall.
He was tried. The jury found him not guilty.
That's so. Mm.
Mm. Did you know him?
No, just here.
Oh.
What do you write about in your newspaper?
Well, I see people out here, their way of living.
Kind of different in England, huh?
Yes, it's quite different.
Ain't no plains, nor mountains, nor rivers. Ain't nothing back eastern England like we got here.
That's true.
Don't figure how come a man want to live back here.
Well, it's a different kind of country, a different kind of life. It's
well,
what?
Didn't sound like no regular shooting. Hold still, horse. I'll mash your sides.
Seems to come from the hills.
Yeah. Reckon someone's in trouble. Let's go.
A range of hills, low-lying, somber, about a mile to our north. It was from that direction we heard the shots. Slim's horse easily outdistanced mine, and by the time I reached the first slopes, the cowboy had disappeared into a canyon. What's the matter with him?
Looks like he's been locking horns with some Indians. I was just riding up to him when it fell down. There's half an arrow in him. Broke off. Now, take it easy, pard. Kendall, you better take his rifle. Keep an eye out.
Mm. No shells in it.
Arapaho's got it. Where?
Where? Where did they go?
Up the canyon trail. Wagon and horses. Claire.
Oh, that's too bad. Too bad. He ain't gonna have no breakfast again forever. That's for sure.
Well, what about the woman? Clara.
I guess she's still alive. Though maybe she'd rather not be. Indians keep captured white women around. Sometimes for hostage, sometimes for other things.
Well, do you think we'd have a chance of catching up with them?
It might. Depends on how long a start they got and how many. I'd kind of like to bury him first. Ain't fitting for a man to lie out in the open after he's curled up.
Yeah, but it'll take time. What about the woman?
It won't go no better or worse with her for the time. Well, that ground's too hard for hand digging. We'd have to make a rock grave. Tell you what, though. You start on it. I'll work up the canyon a bit, see if I can find signs. Now, if you hear three shots, come a-running. I'll do the same for you.
Right.
Wait. He may have some shells left for the Winchester. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's something. Eight of them. You better keep the rifle here. So long.
I began the task of burying the dead man. From letters and a homestead deed in his pockets, I found that his name was Theodore Belding,
There was also a tintype of a young, rather pretty woman whom I gathered to be his wife, Clara. It took the better part of 45 minutes to complete the grave, and it wasn't until almost an hour later that Slim returned.
Well, I found the trail, followed it a way up. There was four Indians in the wagon. They cleared the wagon and left it burned. Took the horses, though, and the woman.
What are our chances?
Can you shoot?
I'm fair.
Well, I ain't done any trailing since 5 years back, but we ain't got nothing to lose. Be getting dark by and by. We'll keep going till light gives out.
Do you know this country, Slim?
Not much, but a man can read a lot of things from places he ain't been. Here. That's where they stopped the wagon, see?
Oh, you mean those double wheel ruts?
Yeah. Must have ambushed him from over there. And the feller fell here. See the blood spots? Guess he made things hot for him for a spell.
Were you an Indian scout, Slim?
Yeah, for a while. Worked with Custer.
Oh? What did you think of him?
For him, I got a can of cuss words, and I best keep the lid on it. Yeah, we'll save our breath for breathing from here on. I want to be able to hear what there is to hear.
We went on up the canyon, Slim reading the ground, or, as he put it, following signs. For a mile or more, the trail was obvious, even to the most unpracticed eye, but after we passed the burned-out wagon, it became more difficult to follow. For another hour, we rode in silence. The sun was beginning to set. A cool breeze was sweeping down the canyon.
Ooh.
Ooh, now.
Ooh. You hear that? Could mean Indians made a camp. Those crows ain't flying. Figure they're sitting in the trees waiting for a handout.
Unless they're feeding on carrion.
It wouldn't be corn if there were.
Sounds as if they're in those trees. See, just over the rise.
Don't seem smart enough for Indians to make a camp this early.
Or they know we're following and they're waiting for us.
Now, shut your mouth, you glandered, spavined coyote. Hoss smells them. Now, we better tie the critters up.
All right.
Pull down that injured rubber neck of yours. Pale-pink,
wall-eyed
son of a gun, I'll skin you alive.
Did you think, Slim, that it might be an idea to work our way through the trees instead of along the canyon wall, huh?
Yeah, I sure do. That old sun's right behind us. We make awful pretty targets. Keep in the shadow as much as you can. We'll just figure they got no weapons except in bow and arrow. That gives us a mighty advantage. You all set?
Yes.
Come on, then. And watch out for twigs and dry leaves. Walk soft.
Ahead of us, through the trees and shrubs, lay the brow of the rise. We made our way upward until we were within 10 yards of the top. That's when I saw a glint in the sunlight and a trickle of sand moving down the slope toward us.
Get down!
In a moment, we return to Frontier Gentlemen. Does that sound go with this music? Sure it does, when it's the sound of the shutters coming off the summer place in the woods, in the mountains, or at the shore. Only 5 more days from now, all America opens up the summer place as we swing into the 3-day Memorial Day weekend, the first great outdoor holiday of the year. But first, what does your summer place need? In the refrigerator, on the kitchen shelves, the bathroom shelves, round the grill. Check now. Make a list now. Buy at your grocer's, your druggist, your hardware store. Then you'll be all set for that great big 3-day weekend. And say, don't forget to have your portable radio checked and ready. Wherever you spend your happy holiday, there's a CBS radio network station to keep you posted on the weather and the news. And now we return you to the Anthony Ellis production of Frontier Gentlemen.
Phew. You got good eyes, Kendall. I sure could feel a sawdust in my beard that time. Where are they?
Well, one of them's between the boulders. A little to the right of the clump of alders. There, you can see the rifle sight.
Want to try a shot with a Winchester?
No, not yet. Only 8 shells. We better save them.
How many rounds you got for your gun?
About 20.
I got near the same. Say 50 rounds between guns and rifle. Not bad if it don't take too long. How many you figure we're shooting?
Two, from the sound of it.
Sharps repeaters, that's for sure. Well, we sure cut a big gut that time.
Seems to me the only thing to do now is to wait until it's dark. There's no other way to get at them without being seen.
I'm wondering what our chances are after dark. We ain't in the best position. Might be we ought to pull back down canyon, wait for morning before we pick up the trail.
And what about the woman?
Well, if she's still alive, she knows there's help around.
White man! Come out from trees. We make medicine.
Here's an Indian couldn't drive nails in a snowbank.
He's trying to draw a fire. Locate us.
Well, let him. You want to make medicine, Siwash? You come down here. That came from the left, higher up. One of them must be in a tree.
I think I can see him.
Yeah, there's enough sticking out. Gone now.
Not on this side.
Now there's one good Indian. Where'd you learn to shoot like that, mister?
Odd places.
What? I'm hit.
Where?
Oh, I'm hit in the arm. Oh, man, that hurts. Oh, that hurts.
Let me see now, Slim.
Oh. Well, it ain't the gun hand, anyhow. Can you bind it up?
Yes. I keep down now.
White man! You want white woman? We talk. Maybe you pay gold in her back.
Come down here. We'll talk.
How does it feel now, Slim?
Like a branding iron's inside.
There's not too much bleeding, though. That's something.
Sure wish we had more cover. I feel naked as a painted cat laying out here.
White man, we come down top. You shoot, woman die.
What do you think?
Yeah, we might have them buffaloed. Let them come. But watch them for tricks. They got 100.
Come down. We'll hold our fire.
Only one of them. Now, if he ain't a setting duck against that sky...
There's two more, though. They must be with the woman.
Yeah, maybe. Keep your eyes peeled.
White man has been wounded.
Huh. Indian has been killed?
We are many. You are two.
Climb down, Siwash. There were four of you, now there's three.
I have Little Knife, chief of the Arapaho.
Your Little Knife, a renegade dog who steals women.
Little Knife, not renegade. Fight with Crazy Horse. Little Knife, not steal woman. Take woman. Like white man take Little Knife land. Maybe kill white woman. Like white man kill Indian woman and child.
The war is over. There's no more killing on either side.
White man say war is finished. Not Indian.
Quit your coyoting around the rim, Indian. What about the woman?
You give me your guns, rifle, and gold. I give her to you.
I'll see you hung up to dry first.
Not our guns or rifles, but perhaps some gold. How much?
How much you got?
$100?
Not enough.
That's all there is.
All guns and $100.
No.
I go back. Maybe you hear a woman die, then you pay.
Maybe you don't go back, Siwash. What about that?
Like all white men, break word of truce.
You speak of honor and murder with the same breath?
We can kill you all. We wait for night. Then we kill.
I got a finger. It's itching right now to wait for nothing.
Little Knife not afraid to die.
Little Knife, you took the belongings in the white man's wagon. Return the woman, and we let you keep it all. That and $100 in gold.
You'll let Little Knife keep what he already has. Not a trade.
Listen, you double-distilled son of a gun. I seen a fair-sized anthill down the canyon away. How'd you like to be staked out?
I make good offer. Woman for guns and $100. You say no, I go back now. Soon as the night, then we take your guns. and the gold.
The Indian turned and moved back up the slope. For a moment, I had an uncontrollable desire to shoot. Then I thought of the woman, of what would happen to her. I lowered the rifle. We shifted our positions a few yards to the right, and we lay there, waiting. And the darkness settled into the canyon.
Funny thing.
Huh? What?
We ain't heard no sound from the woman.
Yeah, I was thinking of that myself.
Wonder if she's all right. Well, should be better than three-quarter moon tonight. Coming up in a while. They gonna try something. It'll be afore the moon.
Slim, I think we better sit back to back in case they circle around us.
Yeah. I was just thinking. Wish I had me a drink of red eye right now. I know a place in Dodge. I tell you, Kendall, a shot of that tornado juice would draw a blood blister and a rawhide boot.
I'd like to see that.
Shucks, that ain't nothing. Tell her what runs the saloon. He serves a free snake with every drink.
Shh.
Shh. Ah! That ain't what you think. It ain't no woman, that's an Indian. I know, I've heard him before. They want us to think it's her.
Are you sure?
I'll show you. Hey, you crow-bait dogs, which one of you's a squaw? See what I mean?
Yes. One thing I don't understand.
What's that?
Why do they stay here? Why not ride off with the woman?
I figure there's two reasons. First, Little Knives probably left the reservation. He ain't got no particular place to go. Second, they want our guns. Indian will do a lot of fool things to get hold of a gun. Come to think of it, there's something else.
Oh?
Ah, maybe they're low on bullets. You reckon?
Yeah, it's quite possible. That's why they haven't attacked.
Sure. They're using Sharp's repeaters. That feller's Winchester ain't the same caliber. So whatever shells they picked up in the wagon ain't worth a thing.
In which case, we don't wait for them to attack us.
I know what you're getting at, but it won't work.
Well, why not?
That wouldn't be no good. Not with his busted wing.
Slim, you stay here. Cover me with the rifle.
He'll hear you before you get 10 feet up the rise.
Slim, I'll admit that I'm a comparative greenhorn in your territory, but I've had the dubious pleasure of slitting a number of throats under similar circumstances in India. Those chaps didn't hear me. I'll take my chances with these Arapaho.
Well, you gonna use a knife?
Oh, if I have to, yes.
You sure are a funny kind of Englishman.
Here, take your rifle.
Mister, I sure hope you know what you're doing.
So do I. I crawled out of the hollow and inched my way up the slope. I had seen the flash of the Indian's rifle and knew his approximate location. In the direction I was taking, I planned to reach the top of the hill some yards from where I had last seen him. It was slow, slow. Then, as I raised my head over the summit, I saw the great orange glow of the rising moon, and silhouetted against it, the crouching form of an Indian half turned from me behind a boulder. I drew out my knife. He died without a sound. Then I made out Little Knife and the remaining Indian. They were a few feet away, standing over a gagged and bound body. And in the constantly growing moonlight, I saw the chief bend down, the glitter of steel in his hand. This time I knew it would be a woman's scream I was going to hear.
Little Knife! Huh?
Hey,
it's all right, Slim. She's alive.
She's all right. I cut the ropes, loosened the gag from the woman's mouth, and for a long moment she only looked at me. Then she began to cry. I carried her down the slope to where Slim was waiting. Then I went back to get the Indian horses and the things which had belonged to Belding and his wife. After that, Slim and I took her to Laramie in Wyoming Territory.
Frontier Gentlemen was written, produced, and directed by Anthony Ellis and stars John Daner as J.B. Kendall. Featured in the cast were Jack Moyles as Slim and Lawrence Dobkin as Little Knife. Join us again next week for another report from the Frontier Gentlemen. Dan Coverley speaking.
Boy, that'll wake you up, won't it? Excitement. Where are they, in Wyoming? Yep, John Daner starred as J.P. Kendall. That was the cowboy, with an original air date of the 25th of May, 1958. Anthony, I don't know why I keep calling him Anton, but he, Anthony Ellis, the show, it was a sustained show, meaning they didn't have a sponsor. The studios fronted all the money for that one. That seems like in the mid-50s, there wasn't a radio program John Daner wasn't in, even though he doesn't really have a British accent for a gentleman writing for the London Times. I'm going to have to fulfill FCC obligation here for a second.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule zero, all guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. Medford.
Thank you, Digital George, Digital Henry. Now I'm going to conclude this morning's show with episode 315, Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. This is the Duke Red Matter. That aired at the final week of January, 1956. This was not a 30-minute program, but it was a daily 15 minutes. So this is episode 5, which would have been a Friday, the 27th of January, 1956. Elvis still, at this point, was not a household name that he would become on to be later that year, releasing two albums. Elvis Presley and Elvis. I still haven't got Paralyzed. The one song I do like off that first or second album. Anyway, here's the conclusion of the Duke Red Matter. My name's Arthur, listening to 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
This is Dr. Gorey. You left word for me to call?
Yes. Wonder if I could see you sometime today, Doctor.
What about?
About the Abbott matter.
No. I'm kind of busy today. I talked to you once, Mr. Dollar. What else can I say to you?
That's up to you, Doctor. Entirely up to you. I can tell you this. I have reason not to believe what you said before.
Now, look here, young man.
I have reason to believe that Duke Red wasn't destroyed exactly the way it was reported.
I'm not going to listen to any tall tales about a horse.
Then maybe you'll listen to one about a man.
What?
Thomas Warner, Duke Red's trainer, is missing. I've turned the matter over to the police.
Oh.
Yeah. How about it, Dr. Gorey? Do we talk?
All right, Mr. Dollar.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. Location, San Pietro, California. To the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Universal Building, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Duke Red matter. Expense account item 8, 90 cents. Breakfast for me and coffee for Constable Tad Polk, San Pietro Police Department.
Yes, sir. I'm glad we could get together this morning, Mr. Dollar. You know, I thought a long time about you reporting Tom Warner missing.
Well, maybe I'm worried for nothing. But I do know I don't like the circumstances of his disappearance.
You using me, Mr. Dollar?
What?
You know I got a police force of 4 men. We can't conduct any sizable investigation into a disappearance. Just aren't equipped for it.
I thought it might be something like that.
I don't want to be spending civic money to satisfy some doubts in the mind of your organization. It's not my province, Mr. Dollar.
Look, the man's missing. Nobody knows where he is. He didn't leave a trace. He did leave a month's pay behind him. He left after an argument with Abbott. Nobody saw him leave that farm, Constable. No one knows where he is now.
Now, just hold on to your britches, boy. I didn't say I wouldn't do anything about it.
Huh?
I'm going out and have a talk with Ben Abbott, Mr. Dollar. I've known him for a long time. Think maybe I can find out something about this. We'll see what happens there first, then make some plans.
That sounds fair enough, Constable.
Where can I get in touch with you in case I have to?
I'm going over to see Dr. Gorey this morning. After that, I'll be at my hotel.
Fine. Dollar?
Yeah?
You think something might have happened to Tom Warner?
Yeah, Constable. I sure do. Expense account item 9, $2.50. One long-distance phone call to Hartford. I explained the matter of Tom Warner and requested Niles Pearson to have a man in Baltimore start checking with Warner's parents there in the event some lead as to his whereabouts might turn up there. After that, I drove out to see Dr. Gorey, veterinarian.
You know, you have a way of not being very nice on the telephone. What is it now, Mr. Dollar?
I just talked to my home office in Hartford, Dr. Gorey. They aren't very happy with the way this case has been going.
They're too bad about them in Hartford. How does it affect me?
Well, they're just about at the point where they might close it and call me back home.
All this fuss, and they're going to pay the claim?
No, not at all. I don't mean they're going to pay at all.
What?
They can do one of two things. They can appeal to the insurance commission for a judgment. They'd have a point. No reliable or cooperative witnesses saw the accident to the horse or the circumstances of it. What's more, there's no carcass. For all we know, the horse may be down in Mexico.
Now, look,
or they can institute proceedings against Abbott. Charge him with attempt to defraud.
That's ridiculous. Why would a man worth almost $1 million worry about an insurance policy?
Well, of course, it's ridiculous to you and me, Doctor. But then legally, it's not ridiculous at all. I can pretty well put some things together. Abbott didn't even want to file a claim for the loss of that horse. As a matter of fact, he fired his office manager, Monroe, for filing the claim. Fired him and paid him a bonus to get out and stay out so Monroe wouldn't have to answer any questions. True?
Possibly.
Abbott blamed the accident on Thomas Warner and fired him, too. Warner hasn't been seen or heard of since.
Now, you said on the phone...
I didn't say it, but I'll say it now. Abbott hated Warner because Warner was seeing his daughter. I'll also say Abbott never struck me as a man who could control his hates.
Tom Warner's nothing to me. I don't know anything about him.
But Ben Abbott is something to you. Now, look, Doctor. I spent some time checking you out because you're one of the parties who can help settle this thing. You've been at practice around here for a good long time. People seem to think a lot of you. I hate to see a nice guy like you get the book. I think I can stop that if you cooperate.
Now, look here.
Forget I'm an insurance investigator. I'm just a guy giving you some information. When I said my company's ready to turn the matter over to the insurance commission or file charges, it means that Abbott will have to sue for settlement. And that's just what we'd want him to do. In court, he'd have to produce Thomas Warner and prove his story of the accident. I don't think he can produce Thomas Warner. With what we have so far, Abbott would lose the suit and the insurance company wouldn't fool around then. There's no outfit tougher than an insurance company when somebody's trying to cheat them, whether it's inadvertent or not. You'd have to be in court too, Doctor.
Oh.
Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
Well, how about it? Can you give me the real story now?
I've been Ben Abbott's friend for 20 years.
And he asked you to lie for him. That's understandable to me. In a court, though, it's perjury.
What did it do to him?
That's up to the company. I'll have to hear your part of it first.
Duke Red was dead when I got out there that night. Ben had shot him. Duke Red hadn't had any accident. Ben made me promise to tell you that he had. Ben had just shot him.
Shot him? But why?
Duke Red wasn't the horse Ben counted on or thought he was. He had good confirmation, but he just wouldn't run. Couldn't run, I think. Ben got mad about that and shot him.
And Tom Warner saw it happen, is that it?
Yeah. Ben told me Warner saw him shoot the horse. He gave Warner some money and told him to go away. I don't know. Ben's losing his mind, I think.
I've heard that about him before.
From who?
His daughter.
Terry, yeah. Poor Terry. Yes, she'd have reason to say that. Huh? Now what?
I'll have to talk to Abbott.
Sure.
One thing still worries me.
What's that?
I went over his bank record. He paid out money to Monroe, but he didn't pay out anything to Thomas Warner.
He told me that he did.
Okay, then. I'll ask him about that, too. Expense account item 10, 35 cents. I lost it in a payphone trying to get in touch with Ben Abbott. No one answered, so I drove on out to the farm. The short winter day was over when I got there. Darkness had already come over the fields. Darkness and loneliness. Hey! Hey in there, open up! Open up! Open up, somebody! Open up!
Mr. Dollar, sir. Good evening.
Hello, Cully. Didn't you hear me?
Mr. Dollar, sir, maybe this isn't such a good time to be coming around.
Is Mr. Abbott here?
Yes, sir, he is. But Constable Polk was out here this afternoon asking questions, and he got powerful mad. There's no telling what he might do. He's awful mad.
Well, I'm a little mad myself. I'd like to see him. Tell him I'm here.
Mr. Dollar, please.
That's all right, Cully. You go ahead.
All right, Miss Terry. I'll find Mr. Abbott, Mr. Dollar.
Hello, Johnny.
Hi.
Oh, don't. Don't come any closer.
Well, what is it? Why is it so dark in here?
I'd rather you didn't see me just now.
Huh? Terry.
Vanity. A woman always has that first, they say. Oh, Johnny.
Who did this to you?
Dad. He's crazy. I just don't seem to do anything to please him.
Here, here now.
Oh, Johnny, I think it's the end.
Take your hands off her.
What?
I said take your hands off her, or I'll kill you with this.
Johnny, be careful.
Wait a minute.
I'll show you. I'll show you. I killed the man for that kind of thing.
Daddy, stop it. Stop it.
Terry. Terry, baby.
No. No, don't touch me. Oh, Johnny. Johnny.
Oh, hold it. It's a pretty heavy cane he uses.
Oh, lie still. I'll phone a doctor.
No, no. Where'd he go?
I don't know. Out that way. Johnny, did you hear?
About killing someone else?
He was talking about Tom Warner. Johnny, I know it. He was talking about Tom.
I placed a call to Constable Polk's office, told him what happened. He said he'd start right away. After that, I took a look around the grounds. All the cars were still in the garages. Then I heard some sort of disturbance down by the stables.
Dollar! Don't come any closer. I've got a shotgun this time.
I have a gun, too, Mr. Abbott.
Go away from here. Get in your car and go away from here.
The police will be here in a few minutes. Look, this won't do you any good. Abbott, did you hear me? It'll be better for you if you're in the house ready to make a statement for them when they come. I know that Dr. Corey lied for you, Abbott. I know that you killed that horse deliberately. Abbott!
I told you to get away from here!
You said you'd kill someone. You were talking about Tom Warner, weren't you? You killed him because of Terry.
Last warning. Go away.
I won't go away. But you'd better throw that gun away and come on out here.
I'm not afraid of you. The whole bunch of you!
You're just being foolish, Abbott. Like you were the day you smashed up a new car because some little thing on it didn't work. The way you killed that valuable horse because you didn't like his running. The way you killed Tom Warner without reason. You're smashing your whole life now this way. Put down that gun and come out. Abbott!
That's enough!
Abbott. Abbott. Oh, you didn't have to do it this way, Abbott. Lie still.
Horner's body. Under this floor. All his things with it. You know about Duke Red.
I know. Don't try to talk.
Warner tried to stop me from killing him. He said I was crazy, Dollar.
Easy.
I'm not crazy, am I, Dollar?
Don't move.
Am I?
No. You're not crazy. Not anymore. They found the body of Thomas Warner where Abbott had said it was. He'd been shot to death. Terry was still in the hospital when I packed up and left San Pietro. Expense account item 11, $65.30. Hotel and board at the San Pietro Hotel. Item 12, $175. Airfare and incidentals back to Hartford. Item 13, $43 even, miscellaneous. Expense account total, $802.65. No remarks. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, there'll be another intriguing story for you beginning next Monday night.
Next week, the Flight 6 matter. A story involving a girl so beautiful that men were willing to kill for her. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Barbara Fuller, Barbara Eiler, Herb Butterfield, John Stevenson, Parley Bear, Will Wright, Robert Bruce, and Forrest Lewis. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, Roy Rowan speaking.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, the Duke Red Matter. That was the original air date. It was Friday, the 27th of January, 1956. Yes, that concluded that. Interesting, all that. He had a $43 miscellaneous expense account. I wonder if that's, if he bought the girl a gift that was wound up getting beat by her dad. She was still in the hospital. Who knows? I opened the show up today with Phil Coe, Phyllis Coe, the female detective in the Double X mystery. And that was, the original air date was the 4th of March, 1936. That quality was pretty good, considering how old that was. It was 20 years later. You can obviously hear the better quality of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. That, what happened in 20 years. The Allies won a war between that. This is Arthur in the grand hour here on WMFO 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Kind of intrigued by what Johnny Dollar is talking about next week. I don't know if I'm going to devil into that, and I'm committed to at least 5 episodes of that. But we'll see. Either way, we'll have a Western next week. This week was John Daner and the Frontier Gentleman. I'm sorry I have to do this, folks.